Your only local news radio, 97.5 KTVB-FM. Troop Tyler Longview, KTVB Tyler, and KTVB.com. It's 7 o'clock. This is In Focus, the weekly public affairs program from KTBB and the Team Sports Radio, featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place.
Good morning and welcome to another episode of In Focus, heard weekends on KTBB 97.5 FM and KRWR, the Team 92.1 FM. We interview those who help Tyler and Longview residents make their lives better. And as always, you can reach out with your thoughts on the show or any topic you would like us to consider airing at KTBB.com/InFocus. You can catch us at a new time on KTBB. It's 11:30 a.m. on 97.5. My guests today, Nicole Henry and Jeremy Flowers with the East Texas Crisis Center. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. We're so excited to be here.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
You're welcome, Nicole. All right, so let's right out of the gate, why are you here?
Well, we have an amazing event coming up at the end of October that really is going to help advance our mission. And it's a luncheon called Advancing the Game. It's featuring a former NFL player and current NFL Executive Vice President of Operations, Troy Vincent. He's really a dynamic speaker. He's been instrumental in the NFL and policy change surrounding domestic violence, but he's also really a passionate advocate, and he has a personal history with domestic violence as well.
He's going to share that with us on what day and place?
Tuesday, October 29th, from noon to 1 at W.T. Brookshire Conference Center.
Okay, at the Brookshire Conference Center, it's going to be Troy Vincent. It's going to be for the East Texas Crisis Center. And Troy was a professional football player for years and years. Then he went into the office of the NFL. He's been very productive there. And so what's his association with domestic violence?
As Jeremy said, he does have a history. He grew up in a home witnessing violence, and he has now spent his career using his platform to advocate for survivors.
That's good. And so he witnessed abuse from his parents' perspective, or from his perspective with his parents. Did he have brothers and sisters?
Yes.
He did. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he's just going to share what he learned from that and his personal growth through that?
His personal growth through it and how it shaped who he is now. And his family, his wife as well, has experienced violence. And so they've used their entire life to help advocate.
That's beautiful. I'm kudos for you guys for landing this guy. Yeah. I mean, that's a big land for us here in East Texas. That's a big deal.
Yeah, it really is.
I'm super excited about it. I will be there for the event, watching anyway. And so let me segue into domestic violence through this. Obviously, it's what you help with. Let's give the org out real quick. It's
ETCC.org.
ETCC.org.
24-hour hotline is 903-595-5591.
All right. Let's have a conversation about domestic violence and about when domestic violence can be worse than others. Times of year I'm specifically talking about. We're going into the holidays. Mm-hmm. I know for a fact this is very common in our society, and especially where it relates to domestic violence, where someone may feel pressure to provide for the holidays and provide presents, realize they can't, get angry. You take it over from here.
Well, we know that mental health is always impacted by the holidays. As you said, Thanksgiving is coming up, and for a lot of people, that is a time when depression increases because their family may not be present, family may not be together, or they may not have the family that they always thought they would, and so they are not able to handle the pressure that comes from society on holidays, because we tell the world to be happy, life needs to look this way, and your Thanksgiving table needs to look like a Norman Rockwell painting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it has to be this certain way. And if you don't have that kind of life, then you're some type of failure maybe, or you're less than or not worthy. So we know that mental health is very important during this time, and we have to make sure that we're taking care of each other. In our world for domestic violence, It may not necessarily mean that there's going to be an increase in violence, but we know that is a time when there is, like you said, added pressure and added stress. And so we try to make sure, especially for our survivors that have left our shelter and they have moved into their own homes. And so now for them, this may be their first Thanksgiving. This may be their first Christmas that they're outside of their home, and then they really feel it. You know, they really feel the pressure of trying to make sure the child has what they thought in their mind that they had, because they really didn't have that Norman Rockwell painting at home anyway. But in their mind, they are missing that other person being there. So we try to make sure that we are supportive, that we are helping them to create what they want their holiday to look like. And I don't mean to run on, but a lot of times for nonprofits.
That's why you're here.
So a lot of times for nonprofits, they will say, well, you know, we're going to do this Thanksgiving basket, and we're going to go to the store and shop and take the basket to the family. Well, every family has their own tradition. Correct. Not everybody eats turkey and dressing and cornbread and corn and mashed potatoes. Some families may have tacos and enchiladas. Some families may have curry. And so it's important for us that all of our services, our programs, everything we offer is driven by the participant. And you tell us what you need and what success, what happiness looks like for you, and then we'll help you get that. So even something as small as our Thanksgiving basket, we don't impose on them what it should look like. Tell us what you want your Thanksgiving to look like, and we're going to help you see that.
Do you have Thanksgiving at the center?
For those in shelter, our cooks do a wonderful job of creating a Thanksgiving meal. Again, we try to make sure we take into the different cultural differences of our residents. And so we want everybody to feel appreciated and seen. But we do, and we have opportunities for volunteers to come in and to prepare a meal, to donate, to help serve that week of Thanksgiving. But that day of Thanksgiving, our staff do a great job of making sure that they have that traditional Thanksgiving meal.
For our friends out there, we have friends that, you know, have families that may experience stress. What can we look for to kind of see the warning signs that maybe something like that is going on and begin to help?
Great question. See the difference. If you have a relationship with someone and then they kind of start to withdraw, you know, early November, they start to not respond to text messages. They're not posting as much as they usually do on social media. When you talk with them, there's a difference in their mood. Just check in. A lot of times it's just checking in. And often we say, well, how can I help? Let me know how I can help. They don't know how you can help. You just do. So just call. Just go over. Hey, let's go for a walk at the park. Hey, let's go to run to Target. You know, hey, I'm going to come over and let's make cookies and watch a movie tonight. Just go ahead and do the thing. Hey, you know what? I'm going to come over and pick up the kids Saturday morning so you can have the morning to yourself. Just do the thing. Instead of waiting for that person to come ask for help, just offer the help.
I hope everyone just paid attention to what she said. Take them to lunch. Talk to them. Get to know them, or get to know their problems, I should say. You probably already know them, but that's something I've seen with the creation of social media, that people just want to like something or put a thoughts and prayers, a little prayer emoji, and they feel good, like, hey, I've done something. Well, you've done nothing but acknowledge the problem. You haven't done anything to fix it, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So
correct.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, we had a tragic incident in our family, and for some, all I received on text message was the praying hands, and I thought, what is this? Mm-hmm. This is not helpful. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. and again, in our minds, we think it's helpful, it's quick, we're not being as thoughtful as we should be, but it's more important to do. Just get out and do it.
Correct. Talk. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing. I think you touched on it. When people begin to stress, they begin to withdraw. Mm-hmm. And they begin into themselves. And again, I don't want to get too personal, but I struggle with stress, man. I don't struggle with domestic violence or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But inside my head, it's just nuts sometimes, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And I have a great friend group and a great significant other that support me and bring me up, and that's what we can do. So at what point does that stress, unrecognized, turn to potential violence?
So that's a great question. A lot of times we do think
thank you.
We do think that domestic violence is caused by anger or stress or any other unchecked, unregulated emotion. But domestic violence is caused by one individual wanting the power and the dominance over another. And so can stress and the emotional well-being of that individual exacerbate the situation? Yes. But the cause of domestic violence is the desire of one person. They want the dominance and the power, and they 100% believe in their mind that they have a right to dominate and have power over their partner.
Jeremy, how long have you been with the Crisis Center?
For 18 years.
18 years. Can you tell me one commonality that a lot of the perpetrators share?
Entitlement. They all have this, you know, as Nicole was saying, they have the belief that they have a right to assert that power and control to receive a desired outcome, you know. They'll go to different extremes to, you know, achieve that outcome as well. One of the things we use to educate on what power and control looks like is the power and control wheel. And it goes over tactics that abusers use, whether that's emotional abuse, economical abuse. They use the children, isolation. If they can isolate, you know, the victim from the family and friends, then they cut off the victim support system and they're easier to control, manipulate, or coerce. And so I would say a sense of entitlement is one of the biggest commonalities among perpetrators.
That's interesting, because I would have guessed fear. That would have been mine. Fear of losing control, fear of losing your spouse, fear of, you know, that. And you would get angry for that. But what is financial or economic abuse, mm-hmm. economic abuse. I finally got that out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, that can look multiple ways. It's one, not allowing the victim to work. Oh, I can take care of you, you know. And it seems sweet in the beginning, and maybe if that's a compromise and it's mutually agreed on, then it's okay. But if it's like, no, I don't want you to work because I need to control you so you don't have any resources to support yourself, or you're dependent on me for all of your financial support, it can look like that. Sometimes it can look like, well, you can go to work, but we're going to share a bank account and I'm going to be in control of the bank account. So I'm going to be in control of all the financial resources, even though it's your money that you're earning. So those are a few ways that it can look like.
It's funny. Everyone I've ever dated, I think, would just laugh at me if I told them that, hey, I'm going to be in charge of this and, you know, you're going to contribute, but I'm going to be in charge of it. And be like, well, might need to find somebody else.
Right. And it isn't always so direct like that. You know, they're very manipulative. They're very good with their words. And, you know, well, hey, let me take care of you. I want to do this, you know. So it's not always like, oh, let me take control of the finances. It's very intentional. And so they're smooth. They're manipulators. They're good at what they do.
Yeah, I want to differentiate having stress and being a predator. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a huge difference. So you might experience stress. That doesn't mean you have a proclivity for violence. You may just stress. Mm-hmm. But the ones that do, I'm going to just focus on men. I'm sorry. I know women, you know, do it also, and yada, yada. You can have your thoughts. Let's focus on men, because men are inherently awful. Okay, I just really believe that. We're good, we're decent, but we have the ability to just be terrible. When you have someone like that, a man that is super controlling, manipulative, all the examples you just gave, what are the chances of them changing and evolving into a caring, supportive human being?
Well, I don't have a statistic to give you for that, but, men have the power to change. Like, we all have the ability to change. And oftentimes, that can be influenced by others. The desire to want to change has to come from the individual themselves. But us as men have an important role in inspiring these individuals who are abusive to change, right? Because we seek our validation of our manhood and our masculinity and our ideas and our beliefs about what it means to be a man from other men. So other men oftentimes reinforce problematic behaviors that foster supportive abuse.
Well, we live in a very combative time, a very combative physical time where you see fights at football games. I won't go to a sporting event now because I just don't want. I'm too old. I'm gonna hurt whether I win or lose. You know what I mean? It's gonna be horrible. So I don't want to do that. When we see, and I haven't seen physical violence out in the open, like at Brookshire's or, you know, a store or whatever. What's the right reaction, Nicole, if you see something like that? What do you do?
Call the police. Call the police. In this day and time, I'm hesitant to say to get involved because we know that there may be risk to you. But call the police. If you see something odd going on with your neighbor and you know your neighbor, you know, take some time to go out and talk with her or talk with him. One of the things we say is, like as Jeremy said, you know, if we have some concerns with our neighbor, our brother, our uncle, that church member, go and talk with them. For strangers, it's a little bit different, but still get involved and just call the police. Simply call the police, and the police will come and the police will work it out.
How are we able to tell the difference? Because couples fight. Mm-hmm. Okay, argue. Let's say argue. I don't want to use it. You know, that reminds me. I'm sick of the word fight. I'm sick of we have to fight and we have to fight and this and that. We have to do. But couples argue. It's natural. And some couples are a little nastier than others. You know what I mean? Some girls will tune you up, you know, with their mouth is what I'm saying. Like they can hold their own. Mm-hmm. Okay? So how do we differentiate between, like, a couple arguing in a passionate argument versus a problem?
And so, again, if it's strangers, it is very hard. So if someone's arguing, they're arguing. But I think there can be some indicators sometimes if it's moving toward being violent. But as soon as there is violence and a physical assault, then call the police. For families that you know, that family member, again, that neighbor, sometimes it's still okay to just check in. And checking in is just, hey, I just want to see how you were doing today. You know, it doesn't mean you go over and you say, hey, I heard y'all were arguing last night. You know, what's going on? No, just check in. How are you doing? Let the person know that I am here. I am a presence. And for the if the partner is abusive, you know, talking with him, hey, friend, I've noticed, you know, I've seen this escalation in your tone with your wife and how you treat your wife and things that you say to your wife, because it's not just about raising voices, it's about the motive behind it, which is to coerce, which is to intimidate. And as humans, we'll see that. We can tell the difference. We know.
For sure. Again, you guys are here to promote the event on October 29th at the Brookshire Center with Troy Vincent speaking. It benefits East Texas Crisis Center. Their URL is etcc.org. Jeremy, I haven't memorized the phone number yet. What is the phone number for the hotline?
903-595-5591. That's our 24-hour hotline number.
Let's kind of change it up here and talk about the children. Okay? So the how does viewing domestic violence and living in a house with domestic violence affect children?
We know that when boys grow up in a home witnessing their mom being abused, whether it's from their father or another male in the household, and we know that they are more likely to grow up and be abusers themselves. And when girls grow up in homes witnessing their mom being abused, they are more likely to grow up and be victims. And so the impact for children witnessing abuse is long-lasting if there isn't an intervention. what we do at our shelter and our non-residential services is we provide therapy for the children. We have group for the children. And then we have after-school activities for those that are in our shelter. And every bit of our programming is designed to minimize and eliminate the risk of that continued violence for that child. But we know that when children witness the violence, and we have those that come in and say, you know, I always make sure he's in the back room, or I send him outside in the backyard to play so he doesn't see anything. They may not see the physical act of the assault, but they see the buildup and they see the aftermath. And children are pretty intelligent, you know, and intuitive. And so they know something is wrong and they know that tension. And so we always educate our moms to understand that it's not just about that at the time of the incident. They're in that home where there's violence, and that impact is still real.
Can we drill down on that a little bit? Because what I'm really thinking in my mind is when you see that as a child, and you end up, your natural inclination, I think, would be to help your mother, okay?
Yes.
Well, at 6 or 7 years old, you're not supposed to be helping your mother. Your mom's supposed to be helping you. So how does that affect their maturity?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So kids take ownership. And often what we see is that families come into shelter, mom and the children come into shelter, and the child has this sense of responsibility to protect mom. And even if no one has ever said it, they feel like the abuse is their fault. So we also work to help them understand that abuse is wrong and abuse is not your fault, because they just naturally take on that responsibility. For you parents out there, have you ever gotten in the car after a hard day at work? Your child's in the back seat. You're frustrated with work and the child thinks that it's them, you know, and they think that you're upset with them and you've not said anything to them, but they just automatically think that it's their fault. And so the kids often will take ownership and think it's their job to protect mom. They have to help mom with baby brother and little sister. And so at our shelter, we work so kids can be kids. We have a beautiful facility with a wonderful gym and computer lab and library and art room. And we have all of these facilities for the children, because when they come in our facility, you get to just be the kid.
It's so peaceful at the crisis center. Mm-hmm. The volume is very low. There's rooms with toys in them for children. There's I don't want to use the word welcoming, because I just think that's the wrong word. Comforting, I think, would be a better word to use for that. But I think that's what's so important about what you guys do, because there's a large degree of shame with this also, isn't there?
Absolutely. There is shame. That is one of the reasons why she doesn't leave right away, because she's also having to deal with, you know, my parents have been telling me I should have left and I stayed 2 years and now I want to leave. There's that embarrassment and that shame. And so our response in the community has to always be acceptance. Whenever she is ready to leave, we have to always make sure that she knows that it's okay, that we're still here, that we support. But shame is key, and just as we have all these great amenities for the children, for the mom, we want them to know that you're important, you're valued, you're supported. So we do everything with intentionality at the agency. From the time you pull up on our property, you know, it's going to be well manicured and clean, not because of us or our employees, but because she deserves it. She deserves what's best, and we want her to know that, because through this relationship, she's been told she doesn't deserve best. She's not worthy. She's not lovable. She's not valuable. So we try to make sure that in everything we do, from the time we answer the phone or they drive on our property, that we're instilling in her that you are worth it.
And if you are listening now and you're actually in this situation, please take Nicole's words to heart. You are worthy. You're a good mother. You do things right. And if you don't, you can improve. Everybody can always improve. I always think the best gift you can give a child is a boring life. You know, just every day is Groundhog Day. Come to the same, ideally it would be the same house, the same mom and dad, and then you just work down from there. But as you know, I think that, I think the divorce rate's up to around 60% now. It's really high. 70% as people get younger. Mm-hmm. So does divorce How does divorce affect domestic violence?
Well, I think the fear of divorce is one of the things that makes it also difficult for her to leave, especially if she's grown up in a community or in a faith-based community.
I get you. Yeah. Like, it's harder mm-hmm. here to come out. Yes. It's harder here to come out with anything, violence, gay, anything.
Right.
Because we're a small Christian community for the most part.
Right. And there's that belief that, again, life has to look this one way. And if it doesn't look this one way, then I've failed. And so we have to be very careful that we don't project our own beliefs upon others. And even if, of course, we think is right, but allow people to live their lives. And often be honest and transparent, because there's a lot of people that's living these so-called perfect lives, but when you really meet them and talk with them, this may be their second marriage. Nobody knows. You know, they may have at one point experienced domestic violence or had any other struggles, but we are so busy with painting this picture of perfection instead of vulnerability and being real and showing people, no, it's hard. Marriage is hard. Or you know what? We were on the verge of divorce and it turned around. But if that doesn't turn around for you, we still love you and support you. So we just have to do better as humankind with loving each other where we are.
I almost forgot. I was remiss in this. You know what really helps? Money. You can donate to East Texas Crisis Center. You can go to etcc.org and donate. And that money, trust me, I'm telling you, it's well spent. They take such good care of these women and children. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing what they've done. My late friend David Irwin was a big contributor mm-hmm. to this facility. I think it was probably one of his source of great pride for him to do that. But I want to encourage all of you listening that you can make a difference helping, obviously. But if you can and you can donate, you can make a huge difference with your donations. Again, one more time, we're here to promote the event on October 29th at the Brookshire Center, basically starring Troy Vincent. He's the Executive Vice President of Football Operations for the National Football League. You can sponsor this event, and you can go to the website and see the sponsor levels, but yeah, you can have tables, VIP treatment. You can meet Troy, I assume. Good deal. I didn't want to put that out there, but good. But that, you know, that will help the East Texas Crisis Center. And by helping the East Texas Crisis Center, you help our community. Mm-hmm. That's the big thing. Is that what you want them to say, Jeremy?
Absolutely.
Jamie, I don't know what.
I've only known you 20 years. Right, no,
yeah, but, yeah, 20 no. years. Well, but age is not pretty, Jeremy.
It takes a village. I mean, that's mm-hmm. cliche as it is. It takes a community, and we're so fortunate for the East Texas community, you know, already supporting us in, you know, instrumental ways to help us provide the services that we do. And we would love for your support for this event, or just if you can't make it to the event, like Lonnie said, please visit the website and just give a donation. We would be so grateful for that.
No donation is too small, ever.
No.
It all goes to a good cause. Mm-hmm. Troy, again, at this event is going to speak on his experience, mm-hmm. which I think is profound. I think if you're going to have a speaker on something like this, you need to have somebody that's lived it, mm-hmm. because you don't know unless you. That's what I found out as I age. Everybody, when you go to a funeral, very quickly, when you go to a funeral and say, I know how you feel, no, you don't.
No.
You don't know mm-hmm. how the person that's mm-hmm. lost their mom feels mm-hmm. until you lost your mother. Mm-hmm. Then mm-hmm. you know how they feel. Same with domestic violence, right?
Mm-hmm. 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 Absolutely.
So you're looking up there at the clock, Jeremy. We got a minute left if that's what you're curious about. 20 years, and I still can't get you to calm down on these things. Nicole, thank you so much for coming. I've been so impressed with your leadership of the East Texas Crisis Center. I know Jeremy's loved it. And please, if you're listening, remember, help. Watch, love, mm-hmm. support.
Support. Simple.
Would that do it?
That's mm-hmm. it.
Yeah. Absolutely. We're so grateful for your time today, Lonnie.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm always grateful for yours. My time is not that valuable. But I appreciate what you, not only what you do, but others in the nonprofits do. Tyler's a very philanthropic community, yes. Full of really good people and some not so good ones. And that's why you're here. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining me. I will see you October 29th at the Brookshire Center for this event featuring Troy Vincent. I hope you guys have the best week.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
In Focus is a weekly public affairs program featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place. In Focus is produced by KTBB and the Team Sports Radio. And we thank you for listening. Join us again next week. Take KTBB with you wherever you take your smartphone. Download the KTBB mobile app, free for Apple and Android, powered by Kelly Community Federal Credit Union.